following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Hope you're all doing well on this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon here in the Auburn Opelika area. Jacob Goins, Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. 2 hours of On the Line right here on ESPN 106.7. We have a lot to talk about today here on the show. We've got Auburn depth chart to talk about. We've got some more of the quarterback stuff to talk about. Of course, the Nick Broms news, we have that to discuss as well. We're going to start making some conference predictions as we are 4 days away from kickoff on Saturday for a lot of teams, but on Thursday night is when a lot of teams get going as well. Tennessee plays Thursday night. Missouri plays Thursday night. There's some Big Ten action. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on between Thursday and Monday for college football. So here on the show, we're going to be making conference predictions for a couple of the big conferences. And as the week goes on, we will continue to do that as well. Carter, how are you, man? It's a beautiful Tuesday.
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be here. And
you got your coffee, so you're good to go.
Yes, thank you to my girlfriend for bringing that, because I left mine at home. But yeah, it was I'm excited to talk about this depth chart, because it's been we're finally here. It's game week. The depth chart is just another one of those things you check off the box that you're that much closer to the start of the season, and I couldn't be happier to get football really kicked off fully. We obviously had week zero, but now everybody's going to be playing on Saturday.
That's right. And, of course, the depth chart was released yesterday when Brian Harsin was on the podium around 3:30. We got some news from him, and then the depth chart came out. So, obviously, we didn't have a chance to talk about it. We go off the air at 4. So, we wanted to start off today's show talking about this Auburn football depth chart, looking at some of the key positions where we weren't quite sure what exactly we were going to see as starters and reserves. But now we have the entire depth chart, offense, defense, and special teams for Auburn in this coming up 2022 season. So let's start taking a look at this. And phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you all show long. 334-321-1390. That's the number to put you through to us. Call in, be a part of the show, be on the line. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think about this depth chart? What do you think about this season coming up? Do you have a thought about the quarterbacks that we haven't heard from you yet? We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Carter, you want to start offense or defense, man?
Let's start defense, just because, I mean, everybody's going to want to talk about the offense because it's more exciting and flashy. I kind of want to start with defense just because there's some guys on here that definitely jump out to me that may not be starters, but I expect to make a really big impact.
And I think with the defense for this upcoming 2022 Auburn team, coming into this fall and waiting on the depth chart, we had a pretty good idea of what we were going to see, right? There was no major question marks on the defensive side. Obviously, there were a couple where you were like, well, you know, you could see some fluctuation, but the attention in the offseason and during fall camp has not been on the defensive side. It's been all on the offense. So let's start with the defense and just running through the starters right now. You have Derek Hall, Colby Wooden, Jason Jones, Marcus Harris, Ico Leota, Owen Papo, Cam Riley, Nehemiah Pritchett, Jalen Simpson, Zion Puckett, and Donovan Kaufman. Those are your defensive starters. Do you like what you see on the defensive starters for Auburn right now?
Oh, starters, absolutely. I mean, it's a great group right off the bat. I am comfortable with this group. I think that everybody certainly belongs in the SEC and the SEC West playing football at the highest level in college football. I'm excited to see what Ekuliota and Derek Hall do opposite each other in that starting kind of edge role on both sides. And then it's certainly a good thing that there's finally some size at D-tackle. Last year you had Colby Wooden and Marcus Harris, who both were under 300 pounds. Really, both were probably around 290 pounds and down. Well, now you have Jason Jones and Jeffrey Imba in there, along with Marquise Burks on the two deep. Well, I think finally the last year, Nick Eason was almost the biggest person getting off the bus for that defensive line, and he was the coach. And so now, finally, you have size. And I think that's going to go a long way, and it's going to free up guys like Colby Wooden and Marcus Harris to maybe you do see him line up kind of in that Marlon Davidson on the edge role, that Zacharius Walker role that we've seen already where he plays D-tackle and then he can line up at D-end. I would like to see them show off their versatility. I'm excited about the depth at D-line. Edge is a little bit more of a question. You only have five guys.
Yeah, the edge is a question mark, but you talk about some of the weights of the guys at tackle. You have Jason Jones at 328, and this is the official depth chart, so this is what we're reading off of right now. You have Jason Jones, 6'6", 328. You have Marquise Burks at 6'3", 302 pounds. You have Marcus Harris, 6'3", 294, and Jeffrey Imba, 6'6", 313. I mean, those are some dudes on the line right now. And one thing that's exciting about Auburn this year is the defensive side of the football, because there's most people think, and I think so as well,
it's the strength of the team.
It's the strength of the team, and this can be a top 25, top 15 defense in the entire country with the talent that is here and the seniority that's on this team. You have four seniors and five juniors on this defensive starting roster. I think that's huge.
I think I 100% agree. It can be one of the best units in the country. The only thing you can't have happen is you can't have injuries at edge and you can't have injuries at linebacker. Owen Papo has struggled with that in the past. When healthy, I mean, I have a hard time picking five, six linebackers that I'd rather have than Owen Papo in the country. I think he is that good, that athletic, and he's been on this team. He's been the leader. He's two-time captain. I mean, there's nobody else I'd rather have kind of directing traffic on this defense. If he can stay healthy and the edge rushers can stay healthy, I like where, and then also Wesley Steiner and Cam Riley. Those three and the five edge guys can stay healthy. I feel really, really, really good about this defense because the DBs, we've talked about it, they feel super deep all of a sudden. They didn't feel that way when we started the spring, but now
some guys have stepped up.
Mm-hmm. And you went and got a JUCO safety. You went and got a transfer safety. Like Caden Bridges has stepped up. Even A.D. Diamond, who's not even listed in this DBs group on the two deep, he made some plays. He was getting some run at different times in fall camp with the ones and was making plays. I mean, he was making it up on the board of Ball Hawk.
I saw him make a pick at practice one day. In fall camp.
DBs feel deep. Interior of the defensive line feels very deep. And it's just about edges and linebackers staying healthy. If that group stays healthy, I really, really, really like this defense. And I mean, I want to ask you this.
Okay.
If you had to pick somebody to be the breakout player, we are not counting Colby Wooden, Derek Hall, and we are not counting Owen Papo on this list. Who is your breakout player for this 2022 season?
For the defense, just in general. Man, I don't know. The guys that have really gotten a lot of love, you know, you just because they've gotten love doesn't mean they can't have breakout seasons, right? And can't beat that dude for Auburn. I mean, you're looking at the safety position. I really like Craig McDonald. I think he can be a dude back there behind. Of course, Zion Puckett is the starting right there. But Craig McDonald at 6'2", 204, I think he can do some really good things. And I think he's gotten a lot of love in camp. The coaches have really praised him. And he can be a big-time guy coming in and can make some plays down the stretch. I like Craig McDonald. I also like Keontae Scott, Eugene Asante. Those guys are some of the ones that we've talked about in the past that know they're not starters for Auburn, but they can really make a name for themselves. Of course, Eugene Asante at the linebacker position behind Cam Riley, who 6'5", 230. Come on now. That's unbelievable. But I like Eugene Asante a lot, too. So my two guys on the defensive side, Eugene Asante at the linebacker position, Craig McDonald at the safety. What about you?
Well, first off, I want to make a comment. As I look through this roster, I'm a little surprised about a couple guys' weights look a little light. Marquise Gilbert at 178. Man, I would have thought as a JUCO safety, number one safety in the country, he would come in a little bigger than that. Dylan Brooks, redshirt freshman, playing edge at 232 is a little light. And then also, you cannot look at me with a straight face and tell me that Zion Puckett weighs 207. He's every bit of 220 right now.
Yeah.
He's every bit of 220. He is a strong, strong dude.
Yes.
But if you're asking me for breakout players, I'm not even going to consider Zion Puckett because I view him as that solid in my head. I'm going to say Cam Riley and Keontae Scott has been my guy all fall camp. He has been my guy. I don't like, there's something about him. I've been around him a time or two, and I like the way he carries himself. And I just think that he can be something special. And if you read all the buzz, I know he's not starting, but there was I forget where I read it, but maybe it was Keith Niebuhr on Three posted something where he talked to a player on the team, and they said first round talent. They said he's a first round guy, and it's going to be figuring out the defense, and I think he's going to earn his playing time for sure.
Yeah, there's just, when you look up and down this defensive roster for Auburn, again, the word that comes out to me is talent, and the amount of talent that Auburn does have on this side of the football. I mean, there's, when you look up and down this, you can, when you read these names and you look at these guys and you think about how they've played, you feel confident in this core and you feel confident in this group. Mm-hmm. For the defensive side of the football, and I think one thing Auburn fans can expect this year for Auburn football is when the defense is on the field, that's not something you have to worry about. This is not going to be the year where when the opposing offense runs on the field, you got to hold your breath and think, oh God, we got to just please get a stop. You know what I mean? You can have some confidence in this defense, whether it's the defensive line, whether it's the linebackers, whether it's the secondary. The defense is going to be solid. Are they going to give up some points? Sure. But not a lot. I think this could be one of the better defenses and most defensive talent, top to bottom, that we've seen at Auburn in quite some time. And that gives me confidence for this entire 2022 mm-hmm. season. I know we haven't talked about the offense yet. We're going to get there on the other side of the break. But the defense, for me, I feel really good about. I don't have many question marks about this defense. And when they take the field, I'm going to feel very confident that Auburn's going to be in every single game because of the defense, something we saw late last year.
Something that's encouraging is I think you're going to see a lot of these guys that are maybe in backup roles right now that will have a chance to continue to earn more and more playing time, but will be guys who are back next year. Guys like Keontae Scott, Caden Bridges, Marquise Gilbert, Craig McDonald. I mean, even a guy like DJ James, who I know when mm-hmm. he came in with the mindset he was going to start well. He's going up against a couple guys in Nehemiah Pritchett and Jalen Simpson and Keontae Scott, who are pretty daggum solid.
Yep.
So even if he doesn't start this year, we know he can be a guy because he was a guy at Oregon.
And as a junior, he could be a starter as a senior next year, which would be huge for Auburn. Hey, let's take our first break in this first hour. We'll come back and we'll talk about the offensive depth chart for Auburn football. We're breaking it down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. 334-321-1390. That's the number to put you through to us. More of On the Line when we come back.
You are on the line. On ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, Jacob Goins and Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Hey, do you think you know SEC football? How good are you at picking games and the winner of those games each week? Well, now is your chance to show your skills in the ESPN 106.7 SEC Football Challenge. Submit your picks every week for all SEC football games starting this week for a chance to win gift cards, prize packs, and a 12-pack of Pepsi. The winner at the end of the season will win a 50-inch 4K Ultra HD Smart TV. Go to ESPNAU.com. That's ESPNAU.com. To submit your picks every week for who you think will win the games around the SEC for your chance to win great prizes, sponsored by Johnny Brusco's, Wickles Pickles, the Orthopedic Clinic, and Pepsi. You must submit your picks by Friday night prior to the games being played on Saturday, the ESPN 106.7 SEC Football Challenge at ESPNAU.com. So you submit your picks every week, and at the end of that week, after the games are played, winners will be chosen for gift cards, prize packs, a 12-pack of Pepsi, and then whoever is the winner at the end of the season, you win a 50-inch 4K Ultra HD smart TV. So go and do that. You can play with your buddies, and you can, it's kind of like, you know, it's sort of like fantasy maybe. You can go on there and choose and play together and see who's the best and see who can pick the games the best. So make sure you go and do that under the contest tab at ESPNAU.com. 334-321-1390. That's the number to put you through to us. We'd love to hear from you. We're talking the Auburn football depth chart that was released yesterday after Brian Harsin spoke at the podium. And Carter, we talked about the defense in the first segment. Let's talk about the offense now, because the defensive side, we feel pretty good about. The one thing that hurts the defense would be getting hurt. And obviously we don't want that. And it's really the edge and the linebacker, where if Auburn were to get hurt there, you're looking a little thin. But let's look at the offensive side, where this has been the focus for the entire offseason, is the offensive side of the football. Obviously, the quarterbacks have taken most of the drama, most of the attention, but we know TJ Finley is the starting quarterback. Robbie Ashford listed as QB2 on the depth chart, but looking up and down, you have TJ Finley, Tank Bigsby, John Samuel Shanker, Shedrick Jackson, Tarveris Dawson Jr., Malcolm Johnson Jr., Killian Zaire, Brandon Council, Tate Johnson, Keandre Jones, Cameron Stutz, and Austin Troxell. That is your starting offensive depth chart. Your takeaways from what the offense looks like as starters for Auburn.
Well, part of the reason why I wanted to go defense first, because our question of the day is going to be, what is the biggest surprise on the depth chart? And it's unequivocally for me that right guard position. Keandre Jones has been the best offensive lineman on this team for 2 years. And out of nowhere, after all the buzz had been Brandon Council or Cam Stutz at left guard, Keandre Jones has an or next to his name, and Cam Stutz is right there with him.
Yep.
That hasn't been mentioned once.
And it's the only or on the depth chart, like you mentioned to me earlier.
Shocking. Shocking to me. The only thing I can think of is Keandre Jones, like, maybe there's something nagging, I don't know, and you just want to rest him and in this first game against Mercer. And it's a great opportunity to get Cam Stutz those reps against in a live game. And you can almost evaluate. I mean, granted, he's playing the opposite side of the line from what we've been thinking, but you can almost evaluate Brandon Council and Cam Stutz against each other. While they're working in the same unit,
right?
Because they're just opposite sides of the center. That's shocking to me to see Keandre Jones as an or, because I consider him the most solid player on the offensive line the last 2 years.
No, I agree, and I think, again, that's the only or on the depth chart. It's Keandre Jones or Cameron Stutz at the right guard position, and so when you look at the rest of the offensive line, you have Austin Troxell at right tackle, Tate Johnson, of course, playing center with the Nick Broms news that he is stepping away from the game of football. He just couldn't ever get back from injuries. He's been there for years, right, and it just seemed like it wasn't worth it anymore, and so he announced, and Brian Harsin announced yesterday that Nick Broms has stepped away from on the game of football. So you have Tate Johnson, the 6'4", 285 junior, who will be at the center position for Auburn, Brandon Council at left guard, and Killian Zaire at left tackle. And again, that's the only or, is Keandre Jones or Cameron Stutz at right guard. You've got a junior battling with a senior, but like you said, Keandre Jones has been one of the best offensive linemen for Auburn the last couple of years, in a position group that's had big-time question marks and had a lot of hate at times. This is the year for me. We've talked about this before. With the offensive line for Auburn in the year 2022, when you look at the starting roster for the offensive line, senior, junior, or senior, and senior. So there's a possibility that four of your five guys are seniors on the offensive line. In my opinion, it's now or never. It's either time to be good or you graduate, you move on, and Auburn has to restart at the offensive line, because at this point, there's no excuse. It's time to be good, or maybe you just don't have it.
Yeah, I think another thing that I noticed with this offensive line is this is the first time in a while it feels like Auburn's had two true tackles actually healthy at the tackle position. I mean, just look at their frames. Killian Zaire, 6'7", 312, and then Austin Troxel, 6'7", 309.
I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean,
you had Bredarius Ham out there at right tackle the last few years. He certainly felt like more of a guard. It probably fit his skill set. Mm-hmm. But from everything you hear about Zaire and Troxel, they're having their best fall camp that they've had so far. Troxel's obviously been here forever. As good for him, by the way, to overcome all the knee injuries in his career to seize that right tackle spot. Zaire obviously had a knee injury of his own and has probably not been either 100% ready healthy-wise or health-wise to play. Well, now, by all indications, he has seized left tackle, and at times he looks like the most likely guy to play in the NFL on this group from what you hear reported.
Yeah, we're talking about the offensive depth chart for Auburn as it was released yesterday afternoon, pretty much right as we were getting off the air. So talking about the depth chart for Auburn in this 2022 season, let's look at the wide receivers, because mm-hmm. this has been a position where over the years, yeah, it's been a worrisome for Auburn. Last year, there was a lot of concern, and could they take that next step? Could wide receiver coach Ike Hilliard come in and make some progress in this room? Everything we've heard in this fall camp, he's been fantastic. And everything mm-hmm. I've seen at practice, he has been fantastic. And it seems like coming into this 2022 season, the wide receivers for Auburn, there is some serious talent right here, right? You look at the starters, it's Shedrick Jackson, Tarvarius Dawson Jr., who's got a lot of love out of fall camp, and Malcolm Johnson Jr., who has had a lot of love coming out of camp. And behind them, it's the boy wonder, Camden Brown, right? You have Javarius Johnson and Coy Moore as the second wide receivers in this depth chart right now. Which one of those six are you looking forward to most on the field, and then your biggest standout player in that room that you think will have the best year, if you had to choose right now?
Well, I mean, if I'm picking somebody to have the breakout year, I'm going to pick Camden Brown or Coy Moore. I think those two have the best chance to flip the depth chart and take that starter role over the course of these first couple weeks. But also, I really like Malcolm Johnson Jr. I think he is somebody who is extremely underrated on this Auburn offense. I think it would not shock me in the least bit if he ends the season as the number two receiver on this team, and it's just so consistent that you almost don't even think about him. Like, he may not go out there and he may not moss somebody like you might expect somebody like Camden Brown at his size and athleticism to do. He may not take a screen pass to the house like you might expect a Tavarius Dawson to do. But I think he's going to be somebody who's just going to play his role really, really well. I thought he looked pretty awesome in the spring game. And I just think he's going to be consistent. But Coy Moore and Camden Brown, I think, have to be your two picks for breakout players just because of all the buzz around them from fall camp. Doesn't shock me to see Tavarius Dawson ahead of Javarius Johnson just because of the way that they've talked about him this fall camp, how his mindset's changed. He's more bought in. He's another year in the system. That type stuff doesn't shock me. Also, you can't look me in the eye and tell me Javarius Johnson is 5'10".
He's not 5'10". And look, I'm not going to talk about a breakout player on the wide receiver room, but I've talked about this guy before, and I want him to be the leader in this wide receiver room. I want him to be that dude on the field and be that dude in the room, especially that he is a starter early on this season. It's Shedrick Jackson, absolutely, the senior. You want him to be that guy that the others can look to and say, okay, what do we need to do? How do we get better? How can we rally together and be a good wide receiver group and not be a thorn in the side but be an advantage for Auburn this season?
I'm not saying this with any disrespect to Shedrick Jackson. I think he's a very solid SEC player. But at the same time, he at this point, he's been here so long, he's a known commodity. I would like him to be the best number three receiver in the SEC. I would like to see a couple guys go and just become dudes this fall.
And you're not looking for him to be the best receiver on the team. You want him to be the leader. That's what I'm talking about.
Much like what I expect from Malcolm Johnson, I know is going to happen with Shed. I know Shed is going to be consistent, and he's going to play his role well.
You look at the running backs, that's pretty obvious. Quarterback, we know that situation. Tight ends, they're going to be just fine, too. 30 minutes into hour number one. Stay tuned. We have some conference predictions when we come back.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Jacob Goins and Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. We're going to go a little different direction here in this segment as college football is getting cranked up this week. It's officially week one. We are 4 days away from Saturday, where most of the country will get going. Of course, we have some games on Thursday, Friday, a game on Sunday, a game on Monday. We've had some games already at week zero. It's been crazy, right? But most of the games are happening on Saturday. And so with that being said, we want to go through and make our conference predictions. We want to talk about some of the overrated teams, the underrated teams, some dark horse teams, and ultimately make our picks on who we think are going to win the major Power 5 champions, right? And so we're going to start today with the Pac-12 and the ACC. We're going to do the Big 12 tomorrow. We'll do the Big 10 on Thursday, and then on Friday, we will do the SEC, and we'll also make our college football playoff predictions, Carter and I will, on Friday. So you have some of that to look forward to. We're going to do this every day this week as we lead up to the kickoff on Saturday for college football. So, Carter, let's start with the Pac-12 first. We'll do the Pac-12, and then later on in the show, we're going to do the ACC.
Where do you want to start with this? Do you want to start
winner,
overrated, underrated?
Well, let's look at how the Pac-12 ended last year.
Okay.
So we'll talk about how it ended last year. We know that it ended up being in the North Division of the Pac-12. It was Oregon. They sat at 10-4 overall, 7-2 in the conference. And then you looked at the South Division. It was the Utah Utes, baby, right? Overall 10-4, 8-1 in the conference. They go and play Ohio State in one of the best Rose Bowls we've seen in a long time.
Both
so many
of,
points.
Both of those teams played Ohio State last
they
year.
They did. Yeah, they did. And, of course, Oregon won that game last year against Ohio
and
State.
And then Utah lost.
And then, yeah, they did. But Utah playing against Ohio State in the Rose Bowl, fantastic game. They did lose. There's a lot of hype around Utah this year, and they were the champions of the Pac-12 last year. So looking at this year for the Pac-12, let's start with the most overrated team, then we'll do the underrated team, and then we'll do winner and runner-up. So coming into this season, look, we got to get this on the table first. The Pac-12 of the Power 5 conferences in college football right now, you could say the Pac-12 is probably at the bottom. It's a battle between the Pac-12 and the ACC, hence why we're starting with these two, and we're going to kind of build up as we go. The problem for me with the Pac-12, and it's going to be the same issue with the ACC later on in the show, is there's just not a whole lot of good teams. And
there's no depth.
There's no depth. And I know we're spoiled in the SEC here, right, because everybody's good in this conference, but the Pac-12 just doesn't have the depth. And outside of one, two, possibly three schools, they're just not there. And, of course, in a couple of years, two of those schools are not even going to be a part of that. And everything's changing as we know, right? And so this is what makes it difficult, because when you look at the teams in the Pac-12 right now, in a couple of years, it's going to look completely different.
Oh, this conference is in trouble. In trouble, to say the least. But at least in the interim, they do have a full conference, and they do get the, I guess, couple-year injection of Lincoln Riley at USC.
Which is where a lot of the hype is coming from out of the Pac-12. In my opinion, they better hope they got a life alert. You know, help, I've fallen and I can't get up. You press the button. The Pac-12 needs it right now because I just don't know what they're going to look like in a couple of years. I don't know what teams are still going to be there and who is going to be watching the Pac-12 in a couple of years. I just don't know where this thing is heading. But let's talk about this 2022 season for the Pac-12. Who is your most overrated team coming into this 2022 season out of the Pac-12 and why?
Look, I'm going to say this knowing full well they're still going to go 9-3 or 10-2 potentially. But it's USC. It's USC because they're getting hyped to win the conference. They're getting hyped to win the conference, but it's a new coach, a new quarterback, new receivers, new literally everything. Everything, it's all shiny, it's LA, it's the restoration of the brand that is USC football. Everybody is excited. It's too much turnover, man. Yeah. I mean, granted, Lincoln Riley, there is a rule that not a lot of people know about when you start a job somewhere in your first offseason, when you take the job. You can kind of run a little bit of you can bring in some extra guys. You can kind of run off the old guys, and he's done that. He's brought a ton of guys in, and the roster is completely different. And they have such an easy runway to start this season. I mean, they open Rice at Stanford, Fresno State at Oregon State. They're gonna be 4-0 when they play Arizona State at home. They should still win that. They should beat Washington State, so they should be undefeated by the time they go to Utah. But they aren't this Pac-12 championship threat that some people are making them out to be.
I agree. That's my most overrated team in the Pac-12. We're talking Pac-12 predictions right now. 334-321-1390. We'd love to hear from you. Who do you think wins the Pac-12 and why? We're going to talk about the ACC later on in the show. Big 12 tomorrow, Big 10 Thursday, SEC and college football playoff predictions on Friday. But 334-321-1390, we'd love to hear from you. USC is my most overrated team coming into this 2022 season out of the Pac-12. Look, they do have a lot of turnover. They still have talent, right? It's still USC. It's still that brand of football. But the question now becomes, we know what Lincoln Riley does, and we know what he can do. We saw him win at Oklahoma. There's no doubt about it. Can he do it at USC in the Pac-12? I think he can, okay? If you can win at Oklahoma in the Big 12, I think you could probably win at USC in the Pac-12 as it stands right now. In a couple of years when they go to the Big 10, I don't know. We're going to find out. But they're most overrated for me because it's not going to happen this year. This is year one with Lincoln Riley. This is year one at USC for Caleb Williams, who I'm not completely sold on just yet. I know he's a great player. He's a great athlete, but
he's going to be really good.
Yeah, well, the Pac-12, I was going to say, the Pac-12 is going to suit him fantastic. I mean, he's gonna do his thing. We're just got to see if USC can do enough to win some games. You talked about the beginning of their schedule. It's pretty easy until they go to Utah. USC is going to be fine. And the reason they're most overrated is because they're getting some playoff love. That's not going to happen, okay? USC is not making the college football playoff. They're not going to win the Pac-12. You can go ahead and wrap that up and put a bow on it because it's not going to happen. But USC is going to be good. I'm not saying they're only going to win three games. They have winnable games on their schedule. They have a good quarterback. They have a good coach. I'm just saying, chill out this year on USC. In a couple of years, sure, let's come back and see where we're at. But coming into 2022, USC is my most overrated team out of the Pac-12. My most underrated team, Carter, the Oregon State Beavers. Why? Because I think they can do something this year. They went 7-6 last year with the bowl win, right? They've continued to get better every year with their new head coach. They've got some decent talent, okay? Nothing crazy. But we're talking about the Pac-12. And all you got to do is score the football, and you're in these games. Now, the one thing about Oregon State, they do have a tougher schedule. I had it pulled up just a second ago, and I'm going to get it pulled back up. When you look at Oregon State's schedule,
I wouldn't have scheduled really... Like it's, I hate the way the schedule starts.
Exactly. I mean, it does not start out, and it's tough for Oregon State standard, right? Because we know it's not like they are just a big-time juggernaut in football.
How are you going to feel when they start 0-2 against Boise and Jake Haener and Fresno State? Jake Haener is a beast.
They're not going 0-2. They start with Boise State and then Fresno State and then Montana State. Christian, if you're listening, Montana State, that's his boys right there. And then USC, Utah, they have a tough schedule. But I think near the back end of the schedule, Oregon State can pick up some wins. I think they're underrated because they have some talent. They went 7-6 last year, again, with the bowl victory. Why am I picking them? I honestly don't really know. I just think they can make improvements. They've gotten better every year over the last couple of years. If they can get off to a decent start in this schedule before they play USC and Utah, maybe you sneak up on one of them and make it a game and some Pac-12 after dark magic. I'm not sure. But Oregon State, they're going to be my most underrated team coming out of the Pac-12.
All right, so I have one that I'm going to say right now is underrated, and then one that after Saturday is going to become underrated. But first, UCLA. UCLA was solid last year, 8-4. They beat LSU. They returned DTR, who's what, top three quarterback in that conference?
Yeah.
Which the quarterbacks aren't that great in that conference right now. It's Cam Rising. It's Caleb Williams. And then I'd be fine putting DTR right there with in the conversation with Bo Nix.
I was about to say, where are you putting old Bo?
I just talked about that runway that USC has to get rolling. UCLA. What UCLA is going to do in week one to Scott Leffler's Bowling Green is going to be mean.
Yeah.
I've never seen somebody fail upwards quite like Scott Leffler has in his career. He really has just like what's his name, who's the coach of the Dolphins who coached Peyton Manning that one time. I'm drawing a blank on his name. Scott Leffler's made a career off he coached Tom Brady that one time and everybody hires him. But they go Bowling Green, Alabama State, South Alabama, at Colorado, Washington. They're 5-0 going to Utah.
That's UCLA starting schedule?
Mm-hmm. They are better than all five of those teams. Washington could get interesting, but they should be 5-0 when they host Utah. And then they get a bye week before Oregon. They're going to go 8-4, 9-3, and I think that's a good year with what they have in front of them. Now, my other one, the Dark Horse team, because right now they're ranked high, but Oregon's going to get absolutely punched in the mouth in week one, and you're going to forget about them. And you're going to forget about them. But then they're going to run through that schedule. They're going to beat BYU in week three, and then you're going to look up November 19th, and Oregon's 8-1 playing Utah at home. And the winner of that game is going to win the Pac-12?
Right. What screams to me in this situation is exactly like you painted it. They're going to get beat by Georgia. I think we can agree on that.
They're going to get smashed by Georgia, and you're going to forget about it.
Absolutely. But the thing that worries me about Oregon, and we're going to talk about them in just a second, is we've seen this story before, right? We've seen where Oregon, they lose that opening game. They're supposed to be good, and then they go quiet for a while. And then the snowball starts building. They get better and better. People start paying attention. And then they lose that game, right? They lose that game that you're like, what in the world just happened to Oregon? And their playoff chances go out the window.
I'm not saying they have playoff chances right now.
Right.
I'm saying that they are going to have a 10-2 year that you're going to forget about after week one. And then all of a sudden they're going to pop up second to last game of the year. And you're going to be like, oh, yeah. Oregon's 9-1 playing for a Pac-12 championship basically this weekend.
And you're right. The game against Utah will probably come down and be whoever wins that game will go on and win the Pac-12. So let's talk about who's the runner-up of the Pac-12, and then we'll talk about the winner as we have a few more minutes.
I've got Oregon. Oregon, we're going to have the exact same thing that played out last year.
Yep.
Oregon and Utah are going to meet twice, and Utah's going to smash them twice.
Twice? You think they're going to smash them twice?
Look at last year. They got outscored 76-17 in those two games.
I think it's going to be a little bit different. I do have Oregon runner-up in the Pac-12. I have Utah to win the Pac-12. Look, obviously, Utah coming off a tough loss in the Rose Bowl. They went punch per, pound for pound, punch for punch with Ohio State. And there's a lot of people picking Utah to make the college football playoff. We're going to have to see how that goes and wait until they just see how the season plays out. I like Utah against Florida. We're going to talk about that later in the week as well. With Oregon, again, they're going to open up with that loss. And I think you're exactly right. They're going to go quiet and they're going to win their games. They're going to do their thing. Then they're going to play Utah. And the winner of that will win the Pac-12. Right now, if I had to choose, I'm going to say Utah. But who knows what it's going to look like when that game comes upon us late in the season. Bo Nix at quarterback, we're going to see how that goes with the Ducks opening up against Georgia. And then how can he develop as a passer and as a quarterback in the Pac-12? Does Bo Nix have a good year this year?
I think he does. I think he does. I think they'll I really like the way he matches up in the Pac-12 better.
Will
I
this think, be the best season of his career?
Yes. Yeah. I think he's probably got better skill position talent at Oregon than he ever. You could combine all 3 years at Auburn, and he's probably got better receivers at Oregon right now.
Yeah.
And then you also, he reunites with his old offensive coordinator. At least he has a familiar face in that building. I think he has a strong year. It's going to make people, I think that there's a real chance that we're sitting here in November having a conversation about, man, how'd we let that guy get out the door?
Do you think Bo, and I'll answer this question too before we head to break, does Bo Nix give Oregon legitimate playoff chances this year?
No, he doesn't. Because, look, as good of a year as he's going to have, it's going to be the best year of his career, he can't beat Utah. I don't see it. I don't see it. I just don't. I think Utah is going to be that nasty, and I think they're going to put everybody who has doubts about Utah, they're going to put them on notice in week one when they go down to the swamp and take a sledgehammer to Florida's face.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to disagree with you, man. I think Bo Nix gives Oregon a playoff chance. I think you're going to see a different side of Bo Nix. Is he going to be a Heisman winner? No.
No.
But I do think Bo Nix is good enough, and I think he can get better at Oregon in his final year of college football, where you're going to see him slinging the football around. He's going to have some really good receivers. He's going to have some protection. And this offense is built for somebody like Bo, who just wants to run around and throw the football and do wild things offensively. That's what Oregon does. That's what they are built to do, is score points and just do dumb things on the offensive side that work and score a bunch of points and have fun doing it. I think Bo Nix does make Oregon a playoff contender. Do I think they make the playoff? No. But late in the season, we're going to see Oregon in that game against Utah, where if they win that game, they have a legitimate chance to make the college football playoff. We have Utah winning the Pac-12, Oregon as the runner-up in this 2022 season. Stay tuned. We'll come back, talk about some Atlanta Braves to wrap up hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
Are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, Jacob Goins, Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Just talked about our Pac-12 predictions. We both have Utah winning the Pac-12 with Oregon being the runner-up, so we'll see how that plays out in this 2022 season. In the second hour, we're going to talk about the ACC and talk about our predictions for that. Of course, tomorrow, like I mentioned, we will talk about the Big 12, Thursday the Big 10, and then Friday we'll talk about the SEC. We'll give our full conference predictions for the SEC and our college football playoff predictions, so looking forward to that. But wrapping up the first hour like we normally do, let's talk some Atlanta Braves as the Bravos are back in action. They've got some games coming up. The Mets have some games coming up as well. This is a critical time for the Braves to try to make up some ground.
Yeah, absolutely. These two series happening at the same time right now is key, because the Mets are playing the Dodgers, who are, what, the other of the big three in the NL. That's the other one. The Braves get the Rockies. They really need to make up some ground because the Mets' schedule gets a lot easier. But I want to take a second and hit you with some new Braves news here.
Okay.
Making his return for his fourth tenure with the Atlanta Braves, Jesse Chavez.
Uh-oh.
Three times in the last 2 years.
Uh-oh. Oh, man.
So now this is his career path. Pittsburgh Pirates, Atlanta Braves, Kansas City Royals, Toronto Blue Jays, Oakland A's, Toronto Blue Jays, LA Dodgers, LA Angels, Texas Rangers, Chicago Cubs, Texas Rangers, Atlanta Braves, Chicago Cubs, Atlanta Braves, Los Angeles Angels, and Atlanta Braves.
Holy smokes. At what, man, at what point do you just be like...
He's been traded more than any player ever.
I mean, at what point do you just be like, you know, maybe this is not for me. Like,
He's a capable player. He was solid last year.
I mean, you're being thrown around like a football in the backyard. Like, what do you... I mean, I just don't even know what's going through your head when you just like... Well, here we go again. Another day, another trade. Here we go. Pack up. I mean, there ain't no way he's buying houses and apartments. He's doing one-month leases and just hoping for the best.
Do you think he still has his place from when he was in Atlanta last season?
If he was smart, maybe he saw the future and he's like, you know what? I'm gonna come back here.
Twice. I'm gonna go back twice. Yeah.
Maybe he kept it. I don't know, man. That's crazy.
He's played on three teams, one of them twice season.
That's stressful, man. Could you imagine moving and playing that much and doing that much in one season? I couldn't do it. But talking about the Braves as they begin a series against the Rockies, the Braves are at home, which is good for them. The Mets are at home as well against the Dodgers. So you would like to see that series be played in L.A., but you'll take the Mets playing the Dodgers however you can get it. We need the Dodgers to sweep the Mets. That'd be great, but at least win the series.
Braves sweep and the Mets sweep, and the Mets get swept.
Oh, that'd be beautiful. Here we are.
Everybody's even.
There's no doubt. We'd love to see that. I mean, look, the Braves have a good chance to win this series. They should, after coming off the disappointing series in St. Louis. You want to try and see the Braves win this series against the Rockies, because right now the Braves are 3 games back. This is a big, big week for the Atlanta Braves to make up some ground on the New York Mets. Hour number one officially in the book. Stay tuned. We got a whole lot more coming up in hour number two.
An Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Hope you're all doing well on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon here in the Auburn-Opelika area. Hour number one officially in the books. You know what that means. Hour number two officially underway here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn-Opelika sports leader. Jacob Goins and Carter Bird with you here for the next hour. Hour number two, it's underway. In the first hour, we had a great show talking about the Auburn depth chart. We talked about the Pac-12. We gave our Pac-12 conference predictions, who we thought's going to win, some dark horses, all that good stuff. So if you missed any of that in hour number one, be sure and go and find the podcast. Just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. You can find it right after the show, commercial free. So again, just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. Phone lines are open here in hour number two. 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind in the sports world, we'd love to hear from you. Whatever you want to talk about. Auburn depth chart, we're going to get into that here in just a minute. If you want to talk about that, some opinions about the quarterback situation, your predictions for Auburn this weekend, or anything else going on in the sports world, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Carter, let's start hour number two like we always do with making headlines here on Tuesday, August 30th, 2022. And pretty much as we were getting off the air yesterday, a couple of things happened as Brian Harsin was doing his press conference over at the football facility. Nick Broms, the center for Auburn, he's been out and he's had some injury problems, and we suspected he would be out for the season, and it turns out he's not only out for the season, he's stepping away from the game of football, just couldn't really bounce back from injuries.
Yeah, he's somebody who was a 40-year starter at Auburn, a highly rated guy coming out of high school. You really can't question his love for Auburn for to come back for what should have been his sixth year, and then obviously he just couldn't get back healthy after a few knee procedures this offseason. Hate it for him, but, I mean, Nick Broms is going to be successful in whatever he does. I mean, he's already he and Anders already have their deals in place, I believe, with Delta to be pilots whenever their football careers end. So, I mean, he's going to be successful like Anders is as well when his football career is over. Both of them are great guys who have always been close with each other and have decided to come back together for this final year. But yeah, no, I mean, somebody who made played in 40 career games and made, I don't know, how many starts? Like 30?
I mean, a lot. I mean, he started a ton.
33 starts
yeah,
in his career.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Really, somebody that you have to tip your cap to and respect for what he's done for the Auburn football program.
And now that he is stepping away from football, it'll be Tate Johnson, the 6'4", 285 junior, who will step in and play center this season for Auburn. He's gotten a lot of good, I mean, he has a lot of good qualities. The coaches have said a lot of good things about him. Brian Hartson even reiterated it yesterday, saying he has the strength to hold up his own on the offensive line in the SEC. So we'll see what he can do. I mean, will it look different? Sure. But I have confidence in Tate Johnson. I think a lot of people do as well.
I mean, I do too, based on what we've heard. But I believe that question was asked by our very own Bill Cameron about his size, because he only weighs in at 285, which, if you look at the roster, is, I mean, he's the lightest player on the starting offensive line by
a good bit,
by 24 pounds. I mean, he's a good bit smaller than everybody else on that offensive line. But Harsin, while not acknowledging what Tate Johnson's actual size was, said that he has the speed and or he has the athleticism and the strength to play that role and play it well. I believe that he's going to be a very capable center. It'll be interesting to see how this changes the offensive line from how it would change from Nick Broms. As we expected coming into the fall camp, we expected him to be the guy. Well, now it's Tate Johnson. How does that change things for the offensive line?
334-321-1390. That's the number to put you through to us. What do you think about Auburn's depth chart? We talked about it a little bit in the first hour. We're going to run through it here again in this second hour as we move on in making headlines. Starting on the defensive side, the starters for Auburn in 2022, Derek Hall, Colby Wooden, Jason Jones, Marcus Harris, Ika Leota, you have Owen Papo, Cam Riley, Nehemiah Pritchett, Jalen Simpson, Zion Puckett, and Donovan Kaufman. And then on the offensive side, of course, TJ Finley is your QB1. He will be starting for Auburn against Mercer. Robbie Ashford will be the second string quarterback. Tank Bigsby, John Samuel Shanker, Shedrick Jackson, Tarveris Dawson Jr., Malcolm Johnson Jr., Killian Zaire, Brandon Council, Tate Johnson. The only or on the depth chart is Keandre Jones or Cameron Stutz at right guard, and then Austin Troxel. So some surprises on your end, Carter, offensive or defensive, that you see on this depth chart for Auburn.
I mean, I'm a little surprised the way that they structured the defense, because they list essentially five defensive linemen, which is not going to be the way that Auburn takes the first snap on defense this year. So of these guys, I would expect to see Colby Wooden and Marcus Harris on the inside and Derek Hall and Eku Leota take that first snap and be the true starters. They just have that extra role listed, that nose tackle role, where Jason Jones and Marquise Burks are listed. And then I would expect, I'm a little shocked that it wasn't listed with four defensive linemen and then two corners, two safeties, and a nickel, which we know is going to be Donovan Kaufman. But he's listed at safety. He'll play a little bit of both. The great thing is you have all of that flexibility in the secondary that you can move pieces around. You've got guys who can play nickel, guys who can play safety. I mean, heck, Zion Puckett can play essentially a third linebacker at his size and strength. And so I think that there's a lot of versatility on the defense, especially when you've got guys like Colby Wooden and Marcus Harris up front in the middle of that defense that maybe have a skill set that every now and then when you need to get really big, you could bring in Jason Jones and Jeffrey Imba and Marquise Burks, and you can slide those guys out, and then all of a sudden you are a very, very large, difficult defensive line to move.
There's some flexibility on the defensive line is what you're basically getting at, and that's true. There's so much depth and talent right now on the defensive line. Don't want to leave the special teams guys out. We have some starters there as well, of course. It'll be Anders Carlson returning from a torn ACL. Interested to see how he looks in these first couple of games as the place kicker. Harsin said that kickoffs will be left up to him. He can do it if he wants. Harsin basically and literally said, that's up to him. He's like, I don't really have control over that. If he wants to, great. If not, we'll let somebody else do it. Not sure if I want him doing it coming off of the ACL.
I would prefer him let Alex McPherson or Evan McGuire or somebody else.
I agree. But as of right now, it's Anders Carlson, your starting kicker, Oscar Chapman, your punter, Jacob Quattlebaum, the long snapper. Punt return, you got Javarius Johnson and Keontae Scott. And the kick return, Jarquez Hunter and Nehemiah Pritchett. I'm interested to see Jarquez Hunter in kick returns. I think that could be interesting. We know he's got some speed. We know he can run somebody over if he needs to. Obviously, the injury would be concerned because kickoffs are kickoffs, and we know what they are.
And he's coming off an offseason where he did have a knee procedure himself.
Right.
Because, I mean, you would like to, personally, it always scares me to see a running back there. Nehemiah Pritchett, I think, is the perfect fit. He's probably the fastest guy on the team. We've seen him in the return game. I believe, he has a blocked field goal return for a touchdown, and then he has a interception or two for touchdowns. Does he have a kickoff for a touchdown yet?
I don't think so. I could be wrong, but what I like too is in the punt return, Javarius Johnson and Keontae Scott. I like those guys on punt return as well. That you've got some electricity back there, whether punt return or kick return.
Well, what's key about that is, you know what Javarius is. He has that suddenness, that shiftiness. But these are the two guys that you heard when the media would get to look at practice, the two guys that look the most comfortable catching punts. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, that's the biggest thing. Because the last thing you need,
muffed punt,
is somebody put one on the ground and give the other team a super short field.
We've seen it in Auburn in the past.
We've seen it bite Auburn in the past, and then we've seen it in big moments against teams like Georgia in, 2017? It bit them. Mecole Hardman muffed one in a really big spot and helped Auburn get the overwhelming momentum in that game that allowed Auburn to run away with it. But I want some first job, catch the ball. Also, I think it'll be interesting because for opposing teams to figure out who is back there returning, because both guys wear the number six.
Yeah, so
both
there you go.
Both guys wear six, and I kind of like putting them there because if you're switching out those two guys, you never have to worry about having two guys the same number on the field.
There you go.
When it's the two guys you're interchanging are wearing that same number. Because we saw, what was it, 2014, where Auburn got away with having, was it Montrevious Adams and Duke Williams on the field at the same time?
Oh, wearing number one. Yeah, that's right. I remember that. I mean, yeah, they have both number ones on the field at the same time. Look, I mean, when you're looking at special teams, is it exciting all the time? No, but looking at who Auburn is putting back there, you talk about the gamble. Again, that's what it is with Jarquez Hunter being on kick return. It is a gamble. I like running backs being back there, and it makes sense, right, to put a running back to catch the football and run, but at the same time, the injury is something that worries us a little bit. Hopefully he can stay healthy doing that. I think he can be an explosive player in the kick return game. We'll see how it goes for Auburn. And then highlighting the offensive side just a little bit for Auburn on this 2022 depth chart. Of course, TJ Finley, your starting quarterback. Robbie Ashford is listed as QB2. We expect to see him quite a bit against Mercer and probably San Jose State as well. Your running backs, Tank Bigsby, Jarquez Hunter. We know what that situation is like. The tight ends, John Samuel Shanker, Luke Deal as the second tight end there with Auburn, who has a pretty deep tight end room right now.
I mean, I'm not surprised by that. You've seen Luke Deal out there the most. He's probably the most capable of the tight ends when it comes to blocking. That's kind of been his role. I mean, I'll never forget the back when I used to work for the Auburn Sports Network, being up in the radio booth, because he tore his ACL in the spring going into his freshman year, and at the end of the year, he's in there to block. Like, and it had been like 6-7 months, and I was like, is that Luke Deal out there already?
Yeah, blocking? That's not normal for most people to come back after 6 months.
No, I mean, he's Luke is a very capable player, has not probably had the opportunity to catch the ball as much. Hopefully, I would like to see him catch the ball a little more. But, I mean, obviously, John Samuel Schenker is probably the most known commodity on this team. He's been on the team for what feels like forever. And
he's a captain now?
Yeah, he's a captain. I mean, has the chance, or at least on the offense, he's by far the most known commodity. He has a chance. If he repeats last year, he could be, break pretty much every tight end receiving record at Auburn, which it wouldn't shock me to see him do that at all. But I do think on this offense, other than the guards, which I will have my eye on just to see what that looks like these first couple games, because we heard so much about Brandon Council and Cam Stutz, and here it is, Keandre Jones, Cam Stutz. I'm going to look at that these first couple games. The most interesting thing with the offense is not even listed, and it's who's that third running back that you're going to see in these first two games. Is it Damari Austin? Is it Sean Jackson? Is a combination of the two. What is that shape up like?
Well, we're going to find out in Mercer and against San Jose State, of course. Today's Tuesday. We're 4 days away from game day for Auburn on Saturday in Jordan-Hare Stadium.
It hasn't really sunk into me
yet. I was just about to say that, man. It has not sunk in with me yet. I don't know why. I feel like
Because it's Mercer.
In the last couple of years, we've had that big game to really get going for, get excited for, and I just don't know, man. And you don't even have the second game to look forward to like Alabama does against Texas. You beat Mercer, and then you turn around and play San Jose State. And then you got to wait a whole another week before you play Penn State. It's nice for Auburn to get off and hopefully get some of those wins, right, against Mercer, San Jose State. But, yeah, it does dampen it a little bit, but
it does
the season's here, right?
It does make me a little nervous the way that we have started to talk about San Jose State. I mean, even SEC shorts on YouTube this week chose to label San Jose State a true cupcake. I mean, they've been a team that's been interesting here in the last few years. They've been pretty decent in recent history.
I think Auburn's going to take care of business, but you can't come into it and expect to just roll them because, I mean, Auburn struggled against Georgia State last year, so you can't overlook anything.
Auburn struggled with Mercer the last time Auburn played Mercer.
Yeah, they did.
So
that's absolutely right.
Just want to say that.
Yeah, and it does. I'm glad you said that because the season's not a damper, and it's not that we're not excited. It just hasn't fully sunk in that Auburn plays on Saturday because we've been used to playing Oregon and Washington and whoever else to start the season in Atlanta. I'm glad we're not playing in Atlanta
feels,
to start the season.
It feels weird. The past 2 years, I'll be honest, I haven't liked playing the big non-con game in week three. I don't like that.
Right.
I would rather play it in the first 2 weeks. I would probably rather play it in that first week just to, if nothing else, get it over with.
But how exactly?
And get a bridge in the schedule where, like, if you lose that game, which Auburn hasn't lost the kickoff game in a long time, but if you lose that game, you at least have some games to kind of get right, make corrections before you go into conference play. It makes me nervous. I don't like having Penn State and then go dive directly into SEC play the following week.
Right. How different would we feel sitting here right now, 4 days away from game day, if we were playing Penn State on Saturday and not Mercer? I think we would be about it.
I think the, like, level, the
nervousness,
the hair would already be starting to stand up a little bit on my arm.
Well, there you go.
There's that anxiety. There's that nervousness, the little bit of butterflies in the stomach. Even as a fan, I can imagine what it would be like as a player.
I want to ask our listeners, how would you feel? Okay, we're playing Mercer week one, but if we were playing Penn State on Saturday, would you be nervous about game one of the season? We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That wraps up Making Headlines. We'd love to hear from you. Answer that question. We'll have another one when we come back. Question of the day here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
question of the day here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Jacob Goins and Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Talking about the Auburn depth chart for this 2022 football season, what's the biggest surprise on the depth chart in your opinion? We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Let's head to the phone lines. Matt, you're on line one. Welcome in.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
Hey, we're doing good, man. What you got for us?
Good. Hey, for me, the biggest surprise, and I think probably a lot of other people think this too, was Camden Brown on the two deep. I think that a freshman wide receiver, I mean, in big Power 5 Division I football, coming in as a freshman and making the two deep at a wide receiver position is tough, and making it at the X position might be even tougher, but I'm excited to see that. I think that's going to be interesting and fun to watch, this year and especially, next year, year after that.
Yeah, Matt, I 100% agree with you there. It's definitely hard to do, but it's something feels different about Camden Brown. I mean, when they had the newcomers practice and the vets practice for, the first few days of fall camp, he lasted one day in that newcomers group before they moved him to the vets practice. And he has been a constant, a name talked about almost every single practice. So it doesn't necessarily shock me to see him on the two deep. It's impressive, but with the amount of buzz around him, honestly, I feel like he's in a pretty good spot to have a breakout freshman year.
Definitely. I totally agree. I think he complements Shed Jackson very well. I think Shed's very much like a solid possession guy. Like he's going to, he catches balls. That's what he does. I think Camden Brown, on the other hand, is more of a jump ball guy. He can, just do things a little bit differently than Shed does. I think they're going to complement each other well. I think in different instances in the game, he's going to be able to really complement the offense well.
Yeah, that's what I've talked about with Shed, is we're not looking for him to be the go-to, just best wide receiver in the SEC. I want him to be that consistent threat and the leader in the room for these wide receivers, the go-to guy when you need a couple of yards, when you need to pick up the third down, when your first and second options aren't there, boom, there's Shed Jackson. I think that's what he can be and should be for Auburn this year.
Definitely. And then I got one other thing kind of regarding your guys' Bo Nix take.
Okay.
Now, I definitely agree with you that Bo Nix is going to have the best season of his career. I think that wholeheartedly, with a little asterisk right next to it that says in the Pac-12. I think we're gonna see the real Bo Nix, the Bo Nix that we all have either come to love or hate in week one against Georgia. I think we're gonna see how he is, how he's always been, and I think that you guys are right about the fact that the Pac-12 is going to complement his style and his ability much better than the SEC did. However, it carries an asterisk for me. Maybe not for anybody else. I don't know, but it definitely does for me.
Well, Matt, hey, we appreciate the call. That's Matt here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Look, when it comes to Oregon and Pac-12 and Bo Nix playing for the Ducks in the Pac-12, it's going to look different, and it is going to be different with him playing at Auburn in the SEC versus playing with Oregon in the Pac-12. I mean, that just makes sense. It's going to look a little different, and look, the defenses are worse in the Pac-12. The offenses are better in the Pac-12 for the most part, sort of.
Sure. I'm not sure better is the word.
Okay, better may not be the word, but
in comparison to the fact that the defense is significantly worse than the SEC,
yes,
it is better.
Yes. The offense is more of a focal point in the Pac-12, but the SEC is becoming that, right? That's sort of what I meant by that. But with Bo Nix playing in the Pac-12, he's going to be able to showcase his skill, and he's going to be able to show, has he gotten any better at Oregon? Have they developed him at all? We're going to be able to find that out as well. I don't know if you put an asterisk by it, in my opinion. I think his career is his career, and if he has the best season of his career, then it's the best season of his career. Yes, it's a different situation, and I get where it is different from the SEC and the Pac-12, but I think he's going to have the best year of his career, and again, I think he makes Oregon a playoff contender.
I'm not going to say he makes Oregon a playoff contender just because I know what is waiting for Oregon at the end of that schedule is this, what I'm starting to view as a legitimate college football playoff threat. I'm not sure they're going to win a game in the college football playoff, but that Utah team is so daggum physical and so just mean and tough. They are what I have wanted Oregon to become in the Pac-12 under Mario Cristobal. I said that, kind of like Clemson, Oregon could become Clemson of the West and kind of become an SEC team in the Pac-12. Well, right now, that's Utah.
Is there any chance that Utah, coming off what was such a great year, I know they have a lot of talent coming back, but this would not be the first time we've seen a Pac-12 team end the year really, really high, coming in with high expectations, and then just underwhelm and underperform. Is there any chance Utah does that this year?
I personally don't think so. And I think that it's going to be a great shot in the arm in terms of confidence for this Utah team this opening weekend, because name brand wise, coming into the Swamp and playing Florida, I think they are thoroughly going to dominate that game, and I think it's going to jumpstart a really big Utah season.
So to pile on a little bit, if Utah loses to Florida in game one, does that change your opinion on how their season turns out?
I think they still probably win the Pac-12, but it would definitely put a damper on it for me. I would feel less confident in that team's ability to... I just think that they're going to be that type of team that just smothers everybody in their conference.
Well, it is the Pac-12, and I think they have some of the most talent in the Pac-12, and they showed it last year at the end. I like Utah as well. I still think they're going to win, but kind of going back to what Matt was talking about with Bo Nix, I still think he has a great year. I think he is going to showcase how good of a quarterback he really could be and could have been at Auburn. And I liked your point earlier when we were talking about this. We may be sitting here early November and thinking, man, what if we had that version of Bo Nix at Auburn, right? We had the conversation last week about would you rather have the quarterback battle Auburn had or Bo Nix? So here's the question now. Would you rather have Bo Nix or TJ Finley starting this week?
I would rather have Bo Nix.
And I think everybody would go on that way as well.
Bo Nix raises the floor weirdly enough, as weird as it is to say that, and would raise the ceiling of this Auburn.
Yeah, I agree.
I think with Bo Nix, I think your floor would probably be around a 7-5 year, and I think your ceiling would be 9-10 wins because you have somebody who has shown that he has the ability, like in Baton Rouge last year, he can go out and win you a game. He has, I'm not calling him Johnny Manziel, but he has moments where he has a little bit of that Manziel in him. And by the way, I think that aspect of his game is going to play very well in the Pac-12.
Yeah, you're going to see him run around like crazy, but I'm looking forward to Bo Nix standing there and just slinging the football because he can throw the ball. I mean, he's a good throwing quarterback. I want to see him do that at Oregon this year.
He's probably going to have a better offensive line, a more consistent offensive line at Oregon, and mm-hmm. he's going to have time to throw, and exactly. So we're going to see a different side to Bo Nix than we've probably ever seen.
Well, for the Pac-12, again, to kind of reiterate, Matt, we do appreciate the call here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Talking about, we've talked Auburn's depth chart, we've talked Nick Broms, we've kind of gone back into our Pac-12 discussion. Coming up, we're going to talk about the ACC and give our predictions for what we think and who we think is going to win that conference over there. All of that and more coming up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Jacob Goetz and Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. We've talked a lot about the Pac-12 today. Let's talk about the ACC. We're going to talk our predictions, who's going to win, who's going to be runner-up, most overrated, most underrated. Of course, we talked the Pac-12 back in the first hour. We're going to do the ACC right here in this segment. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about the Big 12. Then on Thursday, we'll talk about the Big 10. And on Friday, we'll talk about the SEC and also give our college football playoff predictions. Carter and I will. So you have some of those to look forward to as the week goes on, as college football gets cranked up here in week one. But do you think you know SEC football? How good are you at predicting games every single week? Now is your chance to show your skills in the ESPN 106.7 SEC Football Challenge. Submit your picks every week for all SEC football games for a chance to win gift cards, prize packs, and a 12-pack of Pepsi every single week. The winner at the end of the season will win a 50-inch 4K Ultra HD Smart TV. That's right, a big old 50-inch 4K Ultra HD Smart TV. Go to ESPNAU.com. That's ESPNAU.com to submit your picks every week for who you think will win the games from around the Southeastern Conference for your chance to win great prizes. Sponsored by Johnny Brusco's, Wickles Pickles, the Orthopedic Clinic, and Pepsi. You must submit your picks by Friday night prior to the games being played on Saturday. The ESPN 106.7 SEC Football Challenge at ESPNAU.com. So do that every week. You have a chance to win some awesome prizes and see how well you can pick some winners around the SEC. But Carter, we're going to talk about the ACC right now, and we'll start with sort of how we did the Pac-12, the most overrated, the most underrated, the runner-up, and then your overall winner of the ACC. So first of all, who's the most overrated team coming out of the ACC in this 2022 season?
It's Clemson. I know that that's going to be a hot take. It's Clemson. Well, it's two teams. It's Clemson and it's Miami. We're a little too excited about Miami because of Mario Cristobal, because they are throwing NIL money out like it's candy to everybody. I mean, I don't think this is the year that Miami takes that big jump forward. I think it's going to take some time, much like USC. It might happen quicker than USC to me. Clemson, you lose the defensive coordinator, you lose the offensive coordinator and the athletic director that have all been constants of Dabo's time there. I mean, I just think that there's enough of a crack in the foundation at Clemson that it's because, and he hired within. If that goes south, it's going to go south fairly quickly, I think. And I don't believe in DJ Uiagalelei to be a good quarterback. He had a good game against Notre Dame, and then at last year we made him a Heisman candidate. Dr. Pepper signed him to the Fansville thing.
Yes, they did.
And then he was brutal.
Yeah,
he was brutal. And to me, and I talked to you about this before the show, it doesn't say that there's a lot of confidence in Clemson, South Carolina, to me, when Dabo. So Hunter Johnson was a five-star quarterback that enrolled at Clemson, never got to start, left, transferred to Northwestern, where he was legitimately bad and got benched. Well, he was going to go to Clemson to be a GA, and Dabo asked him, well, hey, don't you have another year as a quarterback you can play? Please come back as a quarterback. And, I mean, to me, that says that Dabo's not confident in DJ. And then they have the freshman, Cade Klubnik. I mean, I think they've got three guys who are not ready to be a quarterback at Clemson right now.
Which is, I mean, that's a worry for Clemson, right? If you're not confident in who your quarterback's going to be, it's a worry for Clemson. So you have the Clemson Tigers as your most underrated team in the ACC coming into this 2022 season. I'm going to go a different route, and my most overrated team coming into this season out of the ACC, and we'd love to hear from you, by the way, 334-321-1390. We're talking about the ACC. Who do you think wins? Your most overrated, underrated teams coming from the ACC in this 2022 season. My most overrated team out of the ACC is NC State. And the reason I say that is they're getting a lot of love right now. There's not a ton of people picking them. The overwhelming favorite right now is Clemson to win the ACC. Shocker, I know. But NC State is getting some love, and they're starting to build some momentum in the media for people to pick them to win this conference. And until I see it, right, until I see NC State beat Clemson, because they do play head-to-head this year. They play on October 1st. It's NC State at Clemson in South Carolina. until I see NC State win consistently throughout the year, beat Clemson, and then also finish the season strong. Because after they play Clemson, they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games left in the ACC schedule. So not only win all your games leading up to Clemson, you've got to finish strong after that Clemson game if you do end up winning it for NC State. I just don't know if I can put, if I were to put my money and my trust in NC State to win the ACC, until I see it, I just don't think it's going to happen. Do they have the talent to compete with somebody like Clemson? I just don't think they do. Their schedule's tough. You look at, they start the season with East Carolina on the road, by the way, at East Carolina. Not like it's a super tough opponent, but you never know.
East Carolina's bad, though.
They play Texas Tech.
Bad, bad.
They play Texas Tech in week 3. Then they play Clemson.
Bad, bad too.
They play Clemson at Clemson week 5. Then they play Florida State at Syracuse. And then they end the season at Louisville, at North Carolina. Not super tough teams, but you end the season 2 road games. So, not the, and again, the ACC is sort of in the same spot as the Pac-12. The conference from top to bottom is just not good. I mean, the depth is not there, right? So it's 1, 2, possibly 3 teams, and then it's everybody else way, way, way back. So NC State's still going to be a good football team. They're still going to threaten Clemson in the ACC, but I just don't see them winning this conference. That's why they're my most overrated team. It's also why they're my runner-up in this conference, because I just don't think they can take over the Clemson Tigers. I guess that kind of bleeds into who I think is going to win, but we'll talk about that in just a second. Your most underrated team in the ACC. Look, I'll be honest, I struggled with this one for my most underrated team, but give me yours and then I'll talk about mine.
I mean, I want to pick nobody. I really like
that's how I feel, man.
This conference is that bad.
I love it.
There's two teams that, in my mind, have an actual chance to win the conference.
What I'm saying. It's 1, 2, possibly 3, and then everybody else is so far behind.
Wake Forest is overrated. They lost their quarterback, at least for the start of the year. That's going to be a big deal. Pitt's overrated. I mean, Desmond Howard picked them to go to the college football playoff. That ain't happening.
That was horrible.
I mean, they are probably the most likely team in the top 25 that I would have pegged to finish outside it with Wake.
But if you had to pick the most underrated team for the ACC.
This is going to feel so gross to say. I'm going to say Boston College.
I love it.
Because they get Phil Jurkovich back from injury. And they were a good team when he was the quarterback. He got hurt at the midpoint of last year. They were 4-1, 4-2 with him. And then they went 2-4 the rest of the way without him. Like, he's the difference maker for them. I think he is I don't think he's the best quarterback in this conference by any means. But I think he's, and this is an indictment on the conference, he's a top 3, 4, 5 quarterback. He's top 4 or 5 quarterback in this conference. And I think he is good enough to beat Rutgers, to beat Vatek with a new coach. I mean, they have a path that would allow Boston College potentially. I mean, if they win at FSU, they should be 5-0 going to or playing Clemson at home.
Yeah, I just don't know.
Conference. I hate this.
Yeah,
conference.
I'm right there with you. When you're trying to pick an underrated team. And let's talk about what an underrated team is. It's a team that nobody expects to be good, and it's a team that you expect to be better than their expectations. But when you look up and down the ACC as a conference right now, yes, expectations are low for a lot of these teams, but I feel like it's for a good reason. Like, there's just nobody in this conference outside of Clemson and NC State where you could just say, I could see them having a great season. Wake Forest, maybe, and that's going to be my you can't even say they're underrated because they've got a little bit of hype, I guess, coming into this season. But I just don't know who to pick as an underdog or an underrated team in this ACC.
Are you picking Wake?
I'm going to go with Wake. Yeah, sure. Why not? Because I don't know who else to go with. I really don't.
They don't have a quarterback right now ranked in the top 25. I don't see that.
So if they find a quarterback, maybe. Right? I mean, you look at their schedule.
If Sam Hartman comes back, he's probably the best quarterback in this conference right there with a guy I'm going to talk about here in a second, when healthy. But that's the story with this conference. None of these good quarterbacks have been able to stay healthy.
Let me ask you this. Top to bottom, we talked about the Pac-12 in the first half. We're talking about the ACC in this second hour. Which conference is worse? The Pac-12, top to bottom, best team to worst, top to bottom. Which one is worse in the Power 5, Pac-12 or ACC?
This year, the ACC.
I think
so,
too.
The ACC, without doubt. Utah would beat Clemson.
Oregon. Really?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oregon would beat whoever's second in the Pac-12.
NC State?
USC would beat whoever's third. And I trust Oregon State and Washington State and all those other teams. Arizona would beat Syracuse right now.
So top five from the Pac-12 goes head-to-head with the top five of the ACC. You're saying Pac-12 goes 5-0?
Well, no. I switched from the top to the bottom there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you did.
I think the 12 in the Pac-12 and the 12 in the ACC, if you stacked them up, I think right now the Pac-12 would probably go like 9-3.
Yeah.
I think the ACC is that bad.
Florida, this just shows how much Florida State affects the ACC and how much Florida State being down and not being good and just not even being
Miami
relevant.
Not being there yet.
Miami not being there yet. It shows how much those schools carry and how much weight they carry in this conference of the ACC. I mean, look, Florida State not being good is bad for college football. Let's just admit, whether we like Florida State or not, whether you are a fan of them or not or whatever, Florida State being bad is not good for the game of college football because right now there is no competition in the ACC. Clemson does not play anybody all year long, and then they get to the college football playoff, and it shows why these last couple of years. They don't have any competition. Florida State has been a borderline laughingstock over the last couple of years. I think they're going to figure it out eventually. Miami, there's a lot of people that think they'll get there. It's not going to be this year, I can tell you that. So you can talk about them being overrated if you want to. Miami's not going to be there this year. I think they can in the future. But as of 2022, into this season, it's Clemson, maybe NC State, and everybody else. And let's just be honest. If NC State is the best team in the ACC, are you proud of that? If you're a conference, there's no shot.
NC State's good this year, though. They're really good.
But good enough to play a college football playoff and win a game?
To make it to it, not to... Let's be honest here. There are two conferences capable of winning a college football playoff game this year. It is Alabama, Georgia, maybe Texas A&M based off talent, and Ohio State, Michigan. Those are the only teams capable of winning a college football playoff game in the year of our Lord 2022.
And so that's what I'm saying. If NC State ends up being the champion of the ACC, that's not a good thing.
There is a difference between being able to make it to the college football playoff and being a capable team to get there.
Yeah, I agree.
And being a team that can make it to the national championship game. Those are two different conversations right now in college football.
I agree.
But I want to talk about the winner now. Winner of this conference.
We disagree here.
I am going 100% against your overrated team. It's NC State. NC State returns the best healthy quarterback. If Sam Hartman was healthy, he'd be right there with Devin Leary. Devin Leary last year, 3,433 yards, 35 touchdowns to 5 picks. 66% completion percentage, really good quarterback. Not only that, I mean, he's a heck of a lot better than DJ Uiagalelei. I mean, not only that, NC State returns the 12th most production in college football. There is one ACC team with more returning production than them, and that's FSU, and FSU is bad. Well, that NC State defense that always has a knack for producing a weird amount of first-round guys for not being a perennial top team in the conference, they have the, I believe, fifth most returning production on defense in the country. This NC State team, it's a snake bit program. It always has been. They're snake bit in every sport possible. Just ask the baseball team a couple years ago going to the College World Series and getting DQ'd brutal because of COVID. They're winning the ACC. They are better than Clemson because of the production they return, especially on that defense. And if you ask me, game on the line, you have these two quarterbacks. Pick one. I'm picking Devin Leary 100 times out of 100 over DJ.
You're definitely in the minority. I will not lie. I mean, look, is Clemson the easy pick? Absolutely, because that's just what they do. Is that going to be my pick? You bet it is. Because, like I said, with NC State being my runner-up, until they beat Clemson, not only head-to-head, but beat them through an entire season, and until NC State proves they can actually win, or anybody else can actually win the ACC, Clemson's going to be my pick. They have more talent, they have the better coach, and they just have they have it all. Until somebody dethrones them, nobody is beating Clemson. But I'm not saying it can't happen, but until I see it with my own eyes, it's like Tennessee being good. Until I see it, I'm not going to believe it. Same thing here with Clemson in the ACC. Until I see somebody beat them on a consistent basis, head-to-head and throughout the entire season, Clemson is going to be my winner in the ACC. That's who I have winning coming in to this 2022 season.
I can at least promise you it's not Pitt.
It's not going to be Pitt. We can agree on that, my friend. Let's take our final break in this hour number two. We'll come back, wrap up the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up the Tuesday edition of On the Line, Jacob Goins and Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Well, we've got final take here in just a couple of minutes, but if you missed any of today's show, we've talked about Auburn football's depth chart, we've talked about our predictions for the Pac-12, and also predictions for the ACC, all that and a lot more. So if you missed any of today's show, be sure and go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Just search On the Line. You can find it commercial-free right after the show, so be sure you do that if you missed any of today's show. Again, we gave predictions for the Pac-12, and then just wrapped up with the ACC, where Carter and I, we disagreed a little bit. We agree that the ACC as a whole is not good.
It's bad. It's really, really, really bad.
It's basically two teams and everybody else, maybe a third as an outsider with
Miami is your best shot.
Probably your best shot is your third team, but it really does boil down to Clemson and NC State. But we have final take coming up. Of course, it'll be the drive right after us from 4 to 6 with Bill Cameron, Dan Peck here on ESPN 106.7. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Well, Carter, you've got a final take, so I'm going to let you start, and I'll wrap it up.
All right, here you go. Final take for you after our conversation today about the two conferences we have talked about. All right, I'm going to make a guarantee for you.
Oh, a guarantee, as Charles Barkley would say.
I thought about doing that. I don't think I have that club in the bag for me.
Okay, okay.
But one of Utah or NC State will, I'm guaranteeing that they will be in the college football playoff.
Wow. Okay. I'm writing it down. Utah
or saying both.
No, I wouldn't go on that limb. Utah or NC State to make the college football playoff, huh? That's your final take.
One of those two.
Wow.
One of those two.
And why? Quickly, why? Why do you say that?
Because I really like this Utah team. I think they're going to handle business in the Pac-12, and I think it's going to start Saturday when they go to the Swamp, and they're going to put everybody on notice that the Pac-12 is theirs. Then with NC State, best quarterback in the conference, most returning production with the outside of FSU, but I don't believe in FSU at all. I mean, they are primed for the best season in the modern era of NC State football, and I think that one of those two is going to make it. One might slip up somewhere. If I had to bank on it right now, I would say NC State may slip up once. Still think they're winning the conference, but I don't think in these conferences you have the luxury of slipping up, really. So I think one of these two is going to go undefeated.
That's bold. I've got it written down. So this one is in the books. I've got it written down. So whenever this doesn't happen, I'm going to come back and tell you. But I'm just kidding. No, my concern with that, and this will kind of go into my final take as well. My concern with that take, that and Carter saying that Utah or NC State will make the college football playoff. My concern with that is, with as bad as the Pac-12 and the ACC are, it's something we've talked about today, do those conferences, it's sort of a hypothetical, at the end of the season when the college football playoff committee gets together with the standings as they are, whatever, however it plays out this season, Do those conferences get the amount of respect that they need to put Utah or NC State into the conversation? That's going to be the question, and we can't really answer it until it happens because we don't know how the season's going to play out. If all of the teams are bad and have horrible records and Utah beats them and slips up and has a one loss or something, they may not get in. Same thing with NC State. Mm-hmm. If they have one or two losses in a bad conference, they may not get the respect that they need to get in. We've seen it before where you see two SEC teams get in over a Utah or an NC State if that is the situation. My final take is Clemson's still going to be Clemson. They're still going to win the ACC. Are they going to win the national championship? No. But Utah in the Pac-12, they will be left out of the college football playoff. They will not have a representative. If we want to go bold on this season, the Pac-12 will be left out of the college football playoff in 2022 because, again, I don't think the conference is good enough as a whole for whoever wins, whether it's Utah, Oregon, UCLA, whoever, to get the respect that they need for the college football playoff committee to put them in. My final take, the Pac-12, they will not be represented in January in the college football playoff. That's it for the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We'll be back tomorrow talking about Auburn football and the Big 12. All that and more. Stay tuned. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.
Hello, Auburn Opelika.